we are waiting. I'm going to show you all a picture. And some of you, because this is a famous painting, might know what it is. So please don't shout out, oh, I know what that is, okay? Like, because I want people to just interact with the painting. But because this painting is huge in real life, I had to do three different slides to do it justice, because it just wasn't going to work otherwise. But there are, here's the painting, and here are the questions I want you to answer in your head, and I'm going to do like a couple minutes on each one. Who is showing love in the painting? Who is not showing love? Who do you most relate to? And then one of my favorite questions is just what else stands out to you? So I do want to ask these questions, and I'll go back throughout the pictures for people to show, but what do you notice about this painting? Who is showing love in this painting? So we have six people in this painting. Who is it? This guy?
The guy with the hat.
The guy with the hat. Okay.
The one in the front.
Is anyone else showing love to anybody? There are six people that you can't really see.
Possibly the one.
Possibly this guy is.
Okay.
He's down on the level. Like, I'm,
yeah.
I'm.
Who is not showing love? Like, not just indifferent, but just not showing love.
The people in the back.
Guy on the right.
Oh, I don't know.
Guy
on the right, maybe not. I don't know.
Yeah. And then, yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
He seems a little reserved.
The two lurking ladies.
Yes, the two lurking ladies.
How do you tell?
It's hard to tell what's going on with their thoughts.
You could interpret him as too many cooks.
Mm.
Or as, oh God, another one.
Like, I don't know.
Who do you most relate to in this picture? And I know you don't know what the picture is. But, like, do you find yourself, I guess my question is, do you find yourself more of a bystander watching from the shadows of the moment, being a closer bystander, but not actually getting involved, or someone who's involved? Like, who are you relating to in this?
I love the situation.
Yeah, it's a little bit of the
last
everything.
Last two? Okay.
I want to be the man that's hip hugging the guy.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is that what you mean by relating?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. You can also say who you would want to be.
I'd like to be the person in the very front holding him, but,
yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Situationally, it's not, like, for instance, I feel bad about things going on in the Ukraine.
Mm-hmm.
I can't actually physically be there.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Does anything else stand out to people before we move on? Just, I know it's a dark painting, it's a Rembrandt, he kind of does that.
Mm-hmm.
This painting is over 8 feet tall in real life.
Wow.
Scuro.
Yeah. All right, so this is a painting of the Return of the Prodigal Son.
Mm.
Oh.
So the guy on the right is the elder brother.
Mm.
And then there have been a lot of commentaries on who the three bystanders are. There's no, like,
possibly patrons of Rembrandt.
Yeah. not going to speak. It is interesting that he included them, for sure. And then you have the father. And one of the commentaries we'll talk to you a lot about, and I will fully admit I am not an art historian or anything of that kind, but one of the big things about this painting that reveals kind of Rembrandt's genius, according to people who know these things. So the center of the painting is this, right? Even though it's not the center of the canvas. And the light is emitting from the father. And you also have an echo of light on the elder son, but it's not as fully luminous as the father. And then just some details that I think are cool. And you have to, if no one pointed this out to me, I would never have seen it. But one thing that's cool is that most people say that this hand is a masculine hand and this hand is supposed to be a feminine hand. So,
I can kind of see it. It's like really hard.
Yeah. If you look at it, I feel like if you saw it in person, it'd probably be easier to see. Or if you look at it on your phone, it's a little brighter. But, and people argue that it's supposed to be showing both the Heavenly Father and the Mother's love. Like the reassurance of the Father, you're safe and I'm here,
yeah.
And the caress of God as Mother.
Yeah, one of the hands is bigger than the other, and it's, like, got more, like, veins, I guess, if you look at it.
Yeah. See, Kelly will be able to, like, I was like, that's not, like, I can kind of see it, but, like, so, and, like, and people, like, Rembrandt did that on purpose, right? Like, so there's a lot here. And, you know,
the older brother is not looking, I don't think he's looking at his brother, I think he's looking at dad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
And
sight lines are more to dad.
And his face is more.
You cannot see this real well on here, but the one thing that Rembrandt kept for the son right here is a short dagger that would have been, like, you know, something from home in that culture, like his, like, saying, like, he belongs to his dad's house.
Oh.
So
Rembrandt's culture.
Yes. Like, but, like, saying that was the one thing he didn't sell. The only thing he still has is that dagger.
Gotcha.
And,
something that would have had the emblem of his or his family crest or something.
Yes.
On it.
So there's a lot here. And Rembrandt painted this painting close to his death. This is one of his final paintings. He painted several paintings, and then we have one last one was unfinished.
Storm on the Sea of Galilee.
Yeah, I'm not going to get you started on anything because Rembrandt is a complicated figure. And this is not a sermon on Rembrandt. However, I will say, so Henry Nouwen is one of my, like, spiritual fathers. I've never met him, but his works have greatly affected me. And he wrote a book called The Return of the Prodigal Son, and he talks a lot in this book about the prodigal son and about Rembrandt's painting and how much it made God come alive to him. And I wanted to share this because paintings don't necessarily make God come alive to me. Like, that's not, I love words, but I know that I am one person, right? And so paintings do make other people, things come alive to people. And I will say that the story of Rembrandt and going into this, there's a lot of history behind this because when Rembrandt's younger, he paints himself as, like, cocky. And, like, there's a scene where, like, there's this one he paints of himself and his wife, but it's like, he is the younger son in a brothel, and it's his painting his wife as in the brothel, but, like, very, like, arrogant, very, like, Rembrandt is not the best person. I'm just going to leave it at that, but
did he come from a money family, then?
That I don't remember. He was very educated and very arrogant and very good at what he did. Mm-hmm. Like, and, but towards the end of his life, you can see
the Dutch masters are kind of witty.
Yes. towards the end of his life, he definitely has more, his paintings carry more humility and less, arrogance, right? And so that is something that's interesting that I personally, as a non-art history scholar, never would have picked up on. But I do think this painting is really powerful. And Henry Nouwen spent 4 hours just staring at this painting. He got to, it's in St. Petersburg, and he got to go and visit, and his thing, and Henry Nouwen in this book, and it's a very short book. I reread it this week as preparation for this sermon. I will say it's a great book. It's less than 150 pages. Nouwen talks about both his and Rembrandt's journey as being both of being the younger son, the elder, and the elder son. And what does that look like for them and what, why? We're going to talk about the story that everybody knows. Rembrandt or Nouwen? Nouwen. He's written quite a few books, and I have quite a few if you ever want to borrow some. This is by far my favorite of what he's written, but I love Henry Nouwen. What I want to do today, because this week has all been about, or this month, has all been about helping us to be in the presence of God, right? And so we're going to do a Lectio Divina today, which means divine reading. I'm going to read through this story that all of you are familiar with once. And all I want you to do when I read, and you can look at the, if it's helpful, look at it. If not, just listen, whatever works for you. What stands out to you the most? It's a story you're familiar. What hits you the most? And then we're going to share. Then I'm going to read it again. And we're going to say what word or words, group of words, right, stand out to you the most, and we'll share. And then lastly, I'm going to ask, is there an image God wants to show to you through this story? And then we'll let people share. You are not required to share because sometimes, like, you know, what God is speaking to us can be very personal and it can be something we're not ready to share. But I do think this is really powerful. And so we're going to do that. And then when we finish, I'm going to tell you a little bit more about the story, but I really feel when I was preparing the sermon, kind of laughed because I was like, man, if I knew I was just going to do Lectio Divina, like I could have been done like real quick doing all this sermon prep. I've done all this research, but I really felt like God wanted this for here. And then I'll leave all of my commentary and what other people have said about it towards the end. So I am reading from the book of Luke 15, 11 through 32. Jesus continued, "There was a man who had two sons. The younger one said to his father, 'Give me my share of the estate.' So he divided his property between them. Not long after that, the younger son got together all he had, set off for a distant country, and there squandered his wealth in the wild living. After he had spent everything, there was a severe famine in that whole country, and he began to be in need. So he went and hired himself out to a citizen of that country, who sent him to his fields to feed pigs. He longed to fill his stomach with the pods that the pigs were eating, but no one gave him anything. When he came to his senses, he said, 'How many of my father's hired servants have food to spare, and here I am starving to death. I will set out and go back to my father and say to him, "Father, I have sinned against heaven and against you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. Make me like one of your hired servants." So he got up and went to his father. But while he was still a long way off, his father saw him and was filled with compassion for him. He ran to his son, threw his arms around him, and kissed him. The son said to him, "Father, I have sinned against heaven and against you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son." But the father said to his servants, "Quick, bring the best robe and put it on him. Put a ring on his finger and sandals on his feet. Bring the fattened calf and kill it. Let's have a feast and celebrate. For this son of mine was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found." So they began to celebrate. Meanwhile, the older brother was in the field. When he came near the house, he heard music and dancing. So he called one of the servants and asked him what was going on. "Your brother has come," he replied, "and your father has killed the fattened calf, because he has him back safe and sound." The older brother became angry and refused to go in. So his father went out and pleaded with him. But he answered his father, "Look, all these years I've been slaving for you and never disobeyed your orders. Yet you have never given me even a young goat so I could celebrate with my friends. But when this son of yours, who has squandered your property with prostitutes, comes home, you kill the fattened calf for him?" "My son," the father said, "you are always with me, and everything I have is yours. But we had to celebrate and be glad, because this brother of yours was dead and is alive again. He was lost, and he is found." Take just a minute to allow God to speak to you. What stands out to you? I'm going to open it up for anyone who would like to share. I will say for me, this first time around was when he came to his senses. The younger son, just like that light bulb waking up moment.
I was actually wondering if he'd been an addict and detoxed. It's the first time it ever came to me that way.
True.
But I was like, okay, yeah. He's like, I don't know what they were wanting. You know, what was available to them then in that place.
At least wine.
He's definitely down to nothing to be taking care of unclean animals.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and he goes, he longed to fill his stomach with the pods the pigs were eating, but no one gave him anything. And I'm thinking, he didn't even steal, I mean, he was starving, but he was raised enough to not even steal from, you know, so who's going to notice if I eat something?
I think that was his rock bottom. Mm-hmm. I feel like that was his rock bottom. He felt like, I'm in here. I feel like he felt shame.
Mm-hmm.
For what he had done, and hadn't realized that that's what he was ashamed of until after he started looking at the pig's food and going, "That looks kind of good. Wait a second.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, this is where I draw the line. I'm going home."
Like, it was the moment that he realized it would be better to be his father's
servant
than
to be here
and to do anything else.
I saw all the brother could see. Was his brother's faults and what he had done.
Mm-hmm.
He had no empathy or forgiveness in his heart.
Mm-hmm.
And when his father said that he was dead and is alive again, and he was lost and is found.
Mm-hmm.
So that son committed, you know, admitted his sins
mm-hmm.
to his father and to God.
Yeah.
Well.
And like the brother couldn't accept that.
Yeah. I hear
well,
that.
I'm guessing he had years of resentment. Like,
yeah.
I have big oldest sibling energy.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So like when you are like quietly toiling without complaint, and then your younger sibling, who for all intents and purposes seems to be just coasting through life, does something good for one time, and it's like, what?
Liver, right?
Not
mm-hmm.
to like,
very,
yeah,
like,
not to make it weird, make it about me.
Yeah.
But it is about you.
The same year, I spent 200 hours studying yoga. Not that I got one up on my little brother or anything like that. But I spent 200 hours studying yoga, trying to develop myself spiritually. My brother ran a marathon. So when he ran a marathon,
mm-hmm.
my parents lost their minds, celebrated. And they didn't even take me out to dinner when I got my yoga certification. So I can see both sides of the story, but for myself, I have a lot of empathy.
Yeah.
For the older sibling.
Absolutely.
Like, I've been doing the right thing this whole time. Where are my flowers?
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
I mean, interestingly though, like it says at the beginning that he divided property
evenly.
Mm.
Yeah.
Well,
he has no
The son is not entitled to that.
Mm-mm.
Your inheritance is for after your parents are gone.
Mm-hmm.
His father's still using the estate.
Yes.
But when the son is like, I want my money, give it to me, the father's like, okie dokie.
But
yeah, it is essentially the I will say this. The younger son's comment is essentially saying, I wish you were dead.
Yes.
Yeah.
That is what the younger son is essentially saying.
But that's not what I was going for here.
Sorry, I didn't mean
it's
to.
It's okay. So at the beginning, mm-hmm. older brother gets his inheritance, same as younger brother. And then says, Dad, you never even gave me a goat.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
No, you're saying that they actually
divided his property among them.
Physically gave both of them.
Yeah.
Because it seems as though.
But
yeah,
even if you're not going to argue that, even if you're going to say he divided his property
mm-hmm.
between himself and his son, and his own half would eventually go to his older son,
mm-hmm.
it still says, when he's like, you never gave me anything, he's like, you literally have everything I owe. Like, everything I have is yours.
All right.
I mean,
I do want to.
My point there was that as an older sibling, I do often forget the gifts that I have been given by my family.
Yeah.
So one of the things before we get too far into this, part of Lectio Divina, right, is not so much discussion, but just letting God speak. So we're going to read it again. You raised your hand. Do you have something you really want to say?
I just wanted to say that the fact that stood out to me was the fact that the appreciation of him just realizing that he admitted his sin, so therefore he was dead. He is alive again because now he has repented and come back home.
Mm-hmm.
Lost and found, alive and dead, is the whole means for the celebration
mm-hmm.
in general.
Mm-hmm.
That's what spoke
yeah.
to me the most.
Mm-hmm. So now we're going to read it again, but this time I want you to we're going to ask the Holy Spirit to show you, like, what are the words directly from the text? No interpretation, no pictures. What word from the text is most calling out to you? And then we're going to go around, and all we're going to share this time, just because of the way Lectio Divina works, the only thing you're going to share are the words. And then next time we'll do images, and then there'll be more sharing. So it's like sharing, little share, more share. So this time is just the words that God stands out to you. Jesus continued, there was a man who had two sons. The younger one said to his father, "Father, give me my share of the estate." So he divided his property between them. Not long after that, the younger son got together all he had, set off for a distant country, and there squandered his wealth in wild living. After he spent everything, there was a severe famine in that whole country, and he began to be in need. So he went and hired himself out to be a citizen of that country, who sent him to his fields to feed pigs. He longed to fill his stomach with the pods that the pigs were eating, but no one gave him anything. When he came to his senses, he said, "How many of my father's hired servants have food to spare, and here I am starving to death? I will set out and go back to my father and say to him, 'Father, I have sinned against heaven and against you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. Make me like one of your hired servants.' So he got up and went to his father. But while he was still a long way off, his father saw him and was filled with compassion for him. He ran to his son, threw his arms around him, and kissed him. The son said to him, 'Father, I have sinned against heaven and against you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son.' But the father said to his servants, 'Quick, bring the best robe and put it on him. Put a ring on his finger and sandals on his feet. Bring the fattened calf and kill it. Let's have a feast and celebrate. For this son of mine was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found.' So they began to celebrate. Meanwhile, the older son was in the field. When he came near the house, he heard music and dancing. So he called one of the servants and asked him what was going on. 'Your brother has come,' he replied, 'and your father has killed the fattened calf because he has him back safe and sound.' The older brother became angry and refused to go in. So his father went out and pleaded with him. But he answered his father, 'Look, all these years I have been slaving for you and never disobeyed your orders. Yet you never gave me even a young goat so I could celebrate with my friends. But when this son of yours who has squandered your property with prostitutes comes home, you killed the fattened calf for him.' 'My son,' the father said, 'you are always with me and everything I have is yours. But we had to celebrate and be glad because this brother of yours was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found.'" Take just a minute for what words or verse stood out to you. And I'll start and we'll go to Sarah and just do a circle. If you'd like to pass, just say pass. "But while he was still a long way off, his father saw him and was filled with compassion for him and safe and sound."
"I am no longer worthy."
"Throw his arms around." Best road.
"You are always with me and everything I have is yours. Dead and alive again, lost and found.
Father, give me my share of the estate."
"This brother of yours was dead and he is alive again. He was lost and is found."
"He ran to his son, threw his arms around him and kissed him. Wild living, that country. So his father went out."
We're going to read it one more time. And you can focus on the words that stood out to you and ask. We're asking the Holy Spirit, what does he want to show us? It could be something clear from this story, but it could be something different. I ask that you let the Holy Spirit speak to you and just trust that he is speaking, even if it's random. Like, you're like, "I saw a picture of a train." Just let it go. Like, just be there and trust that the Holy Spirit is speaking. Jesus continued, "There was a man who had two sons. The younger one said to his father, 'Father, give me my share of the estate.' So he has divided his property between them. Not long after that, the younger son got together all he had, set off for a distant country, and there squandered his wealth in wild living. After he had spent everything, there was a severe famine in that whole country, and he began to be in need. So he went and hired himself out to a citizen of that country, who sent him to his fields to feed pigs. He longed to fill his stomach with the pods that the pigs were eating, but no one gave him anything. When he came to his senses, he said, 'How many of my father's hired servants have food to spare, and here I am starving to death? I will set out and go back to my father and say to him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and against you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. Make me like one of your hired servants. So he got up and went to his father. But while he was still a long way off, his father saw him and was filled with compassion for him. He ran to his son, threw his arms around him, and kissed him. The son said to him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and against you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. But the father said to his servants, Quick, bring the best robe and put it on him. Put a ring on his finger and sandals on his feet. Bring the fattened calf and kill it. Let's have a feast and celebrate. For this son of mine was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found. So they began to celebrate. Meanwhile, the older son was in the field. When he came near the house, he heard music and dancing. So he called one of the servants and asked him what was going on. Your brother has come, he replied, and your father has killed the fattened calf because he has him back safe and sound. The older brother became angry and refused to go in. So his father went out and pleaded with him. But he answered his father, Look, all these years I've been slaving for you and never disobeyed your orders. Yet you never gave me even a young goat so I could celebrate with my friends. But when this son of yours who has squandered your property with prostitutes comes home, you kill the fattened calf for him? My son, the father said, you are always with me, and everything I have is yours. But we had to celebrate and be glad because this brother of yours was dead and is alive with me. He was lost and is found. So I'm going to give us about 2 minutes to just be and just see what God speaks to you during this time. And bring us back together. And if you need to pass or would like to pass, feel free. You may share a picture. You may say what God is speaking to you. But this is an exercise and trust that the Holy Spirit does speak to each of us. And so for me, really what stood out to me during that time was the everything I have is yours. And I kept seeing like a garden, which I think was like Eden. And that reminder that like it's easy. And I know I have in the past, I'm not an elder sibling, but like in the past been like jealous of people who got to do like crazy things, you know, and then like then become Christians, you know, like there's that sense of like, I am working really hard and I've always done the right thing. And God's like, I have this whole garden for you that you've always been able to be in. And like, they were off not having, like, they might've looked like they had a good time, but it really wasn't. And like, but yeah, sorry, I'm getting too much. Really, it's the garden that was really standing out to me.
This part about how the father's servants have food to spare.
Mm.
It's all a fridge full of leftovers.
Mm.
And coupled that with the big party at the end. For some reason, whenever I hear that part, I don't see, like, tents and torches. I literally see like there's like, you know, the party lights hanging and everything.
Mm-hmm.
You're coming in from the fields in the dark and you see music and, you know, somebody's got the fiddle out.
I just image of both the just, I don't know, the weekend, probably a little bit skin and bones body of the younger kind of, and then being like covered in a giant robe over, you know, being embraced and I don't know how to explain it, but like not fitting.
Mm. Mm.
Pass.
Almost kind of like Luke's. Just the feeling of being completely filthy and disgusting, and then just having your father run out to you and hugging you and loving on you, even though you're probably reeked to high heaven.
Mm-hmm.
So that was just really strong.
Yeah.
To me, it was an image of a castle wall where, like, the father sees the son from like a high tower.
Mm-hmm.
And instead of staying inside the wall or inside the garden where it's safe, it goes out.
Mm-hmm. Oh, there's Hannah. Hey, Hannah.
Hey, Hannah.
I'm glad you made it. As we kind of... God speaks to each of us in different ways. This is a very common parable that people like to talk about. And to Kelly's point, like, the elder son kind of gets thrown under the bus a little bit. I do, like, and I think at different times in our lives, we become more like, we relate closer to either the younger son or the elder son. One of my favorite things, though, is that the father notices that the elder son is not there. Mm-hmm. The father is like, this isn't a party because my elder son's not here. Like, and sometimes I know it can feel like, even if you're not an elder sibling, like that you've been doing things for God and you've been trying to do it right. And you're like, but God, like, how can you celebrate this person who did everything wrong? Right. And I'm sitting here struggling and still looking after your sheep and still doing this and that. And so I have a suspicion, and I could be wrong, that the majority of us here often feel more like the elder brother than the younger. Now, there are some of you who probably do feel like the younger brother. You know, you recognize where you have sinned and where you need to come home and all of that. But one of my favorite things about this book, and which I didn't mention in the beginning, is Henry Nouwen talks about, but sons become their fathers. Like, you don't get to stay as the elder brother or as the younger brother. Your job is to become like the father. You can relate to them and all of that, and they all have their hangups, right? That yes, the younger brother repents, but he's got to learn how to live, you know, he's got to learn how to live now. Like, the elder brother has to deal with some heart issues, right? Because the father's like, I've been here the whole time. I've just wanted to be in a relationship with you. Meanwhile, you felt you had to serve me. And I just, you know, we could have had a party every other week. Like, you never asked. And there's a lot of us who never ask, right? Like, we just take what's been given to us. But at the end of the day, we're called to live in that compassionate love of the Father. The Father who sees the son that has been wayward from a great deal off and runs out to them. They're like, oh, they're coming home. I'm going to meet them. And then also the one that goes, my eldest son's not in this room. Like, who notices when someone's absent and says, you are supposed to be here too. Because this party is just as much for you. Like, and that's a hard call, right? Like, and there's a reason, right, that the light in Rembrandt's painting is coming from the Father, right? Like, and it's all focused here. But there is an important point. Like, the elder son still has a little bit of light. Like, Rembrandt paints in a lot of dark colors. I don't know why. I'm not an art historian, whatever. But I do know that, like, it is telling that the elder brother still has some light in that picture. And that the focus here, right? Yes, the light is here. And, like, we're called to emit that light and to clothe those who don't have it in that light, right? And there's this, I'm going to read this quote from, there's a lot of quotes I could read. I debated. A lot, but I'm going to read this one about how the Father is not without sorrow, and that what it looks like to, like, live that. For me, it is amazing to experience the radical difference between cynicism and joy. Cynics seek darkness wherever they go. Mm-hmm. They always point to approaching dangers, impure motives, and hidden schemes. They call trust naive, care romantic, and forgiveness sentimental. They sneer at enthusiasm, ridicule spiritual fervor, and despise charismatic behavior. They consider themselves realists who see for reality for what it truly is and who are not deceived by quote-unquote escapist emotions. But in the belittling God's joy, their darkness only calls forth more darkness. People who have come to know the joy of God do not deny the darkness, but they choose not to live in it. They claim that the light that shines in the darkness can be trusted more than the darkness itself, and that a little bit of light can dispel a lot of darkness. They point each other to flashes of light here and there and remind each other that they reveal the hidden but real presence of God. They discover that there are people who heal each other's wounds, forgive each other's offenses, share their possessions, and foster the spirit of community, celebrate the gifts they have received, and live in constant anticipation of the full manifestation of God's glory. Every moment of each day, I have the chance to choose between cynicism and joy. Every thought I have can be cynical or joyful. Every word I speak can be cynical or joyful. Every action can be cynical or joyful. Increasingly, I am aware of these possible choices, and increasingly, I discover that every choice for joy in return reveals more joy and offers more reason to make a true celebration in the house of the Father. And that's what I think is the biggest difference between the Father and the brother, right? And we have to make the choice to see... to see that. And it doesn't mean that there's not pain, because like the father felt a lot of pain, right? Losing his son and his son coming up to him and saying, essentially, I want you to be dead. Now it talks about how he's asked this question throughout different cultures and different places. And they're like, what would happen if a son did this? And they're like, it wouldn't happen. They're like, but no, what would happen? And they're like, well, then the father would beat him silly, because essentially he's saying, I want you dead. Like, I want my inheritance. You're dead to me. There is no, that is, it is a crucial breaking of relationship that is happening. And then the father, so the father's heart is broken, right? We have to remember that the father allowed himself to grieve. And that's why he's able to. And I am more and more convinced that Christianity is like, to live like Christ is to have your heart broken over and over again. And it's to choose to love anyway. It's to choose to love anyway. And it is choose to be able to move forward. And one of my favorite poets, Rupi Kapoor, has a poem. And it's, what is stronger than a heart that breaks over and over again, but still beats? And that is the choice we are. Like, God is with us in the heartbreak. And in that heartbreak, he'll show us joy. Yeah, I see you. And so that's just like, I don't know. Like, that call to be the father is so important. So, yeah, go ahead.
Well, because I feel like that's what God did.
Mm-hmm.
God was like, I want to be with my people. Well, they'll kill you. I need to be with them anyway.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And it's very natural to want to put on armor, right? And I think that's something that is also very telling in the story, right? Because the son loses everything, right? He doesn't have any armor. He doesn't even have clothes that are worth it, right?
He didn't have hair.
He doesn't have hair. And obviously Rembrandt is artistically retelling the story. I think I remember reading that he painted this again, but this is the later one. But I don't quote me on that. But, and the elder brother is missing out, right? Because he's holding on to his armor. He's holding on to everything that gives him the authority and everything that makes him a good son. And the father's saying, I want to be with you and I want to share all of this blessing I have, right? And yes, there's work involved, but the point is that we can live abundantly together. And sometimes we get hung up in the, well, God told me to do this and I need to do this. And God's like, I want to be here with you. And it takes the vulnerability of the younger brother in a lot of ways to that. And I wish I had more comforting words in some sense, because what I have become more and more convinced of in my life is that to follow Christ is to have your heart broken over and over again and to still find joy anyway. And to still find love anyway. And to be like your heart gets broken, but there's still so much joy. And I don't know how to put that in a way that makes sense, because it is a paradox. But I know that when I put on armor and I don't let myself be broken or hurt by things or people, then the love of Father cannot escape me. It stays with me. You know, and that reminder, he has this quote, the grieving is praying, right? And I am, like, there's that sense. There are so, he says, like, there are so few mourners left in this world. But grief is the discipline of the heart that sees the sin of the world and knows itself to be the sorrowful price of freedom without which love cannot bloom. I am beginning to see that much of praying is grieving, that grief is so deep, not just that because human sin is so great, but also and more so because the divine love is so boundless. To become like the Father, whose only authority is compassion, I have to shed countless tears and to prepare my heart to receive anyone, whatever their journey has been, and forgive them from that heart. So, I hope that wherever you are in your current walk, if you are feeling like a younger son, or if you are feeling like a bystander who is watching everything happening, or if you feel like the elder son, that you have the courage to start becoming like the Father. Because the real point of this parable, right, we labeled it, not Jesus, the return of the prodigal son. The title, the parable should really be called the love of the Father, right? Like, we labeled it the prodigal son. But really, the main character is the Father. And so...
Well,
go ahead.
I'm sorry. It's also giving hope, though, that you can return.
Yes.
So the I think the return is an important part of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we did that. So now... but just a reminder, like, the Father loves both his sons. There's not a... and, like, all of his, like, his children, he does. And, yes, this uses sons. I think it's very telling. There are three parables listed. God is portrayed as male in two of them and female in one of them. And that Jesus was very smart in the sense of, one of my friends once said, like, you know, I think that if Jesus came as a woman, he would have been crucified much earlier. Right? Like, you know, like, and so, like, there is a time and a place. And so I think it's very telling that Jesus, the fact that Jesus ever includes parables that show God as a woman really tell you about the nature of God, because, like, that wouldn't have been very the done thing, right? And yes, it's talking about sons because they were the ones who inherited at the time, but it is for all of us. And the Father in this story loves both his sons, and he wants to bless both his sons. That's, I think, something I didn't pick up on until much later in life, right? Because it does feel like the prodigal son just got like, oh, you wasted all of dad's money, and then you got a party? and, like, I think it's very easy if you grew up in the church or grew up Christian to feel that way. Meanwhile, we miss out on the fact that God's like, there's a party happening every day at my house. There's a feast happening every day. Why aren't you participating? And it is both sorrowful and joyful. And then lastly, like, we cannot stay as children. We are called to become like the Father. You know, whether or not I originally had this as, like, we become the Father. But, like, you may not ever have children in this room. But the important thing is, like, you don't get to stay as a, like, you are always God's child, right? But at some point, you have to decide to be a spiritual mother or a spiritual father to those around you. And that is a choice. Like, you can stay the child and just think about who's going to feed me. Or you can do what Christ has asked us to do and to become more like him and more like the Father.